Welcome to another edition of Octagon Outlook. I'm James Lynch. So happy to be joined by one of my longtime friends, one of my longtime co-hosts here on the program today, Adam Martin, joining us here to recap UFC Vegas 19. Adam, how are you today?
I'm doing great, James. Doing awesome. Great card on the weekend, man. Exactly what I expected. I thought it'd be a great card. Some of these cards, you know, people look at and they might not see the big names, James, but I was looking at the matchups. There were some great fights on this card, and I think it lived up to the hype, but I'm doing great, man, and I know you haven't announced it. I don't know if you want to do that
now. We'll do it later. We'll tease it a little bit. I mean, people probably know that Adam and I are going to be joining forces again. We'll get into a little bit of detail on that after we recap this card. But let's start with it at the top of the card. Curtis Blaydes, Derek Lewis. Curtis Blaydes, a big favorite heading into this one. And it is Derek Lewis who gets the knockout win in the second round. Here's my take on this fight, Adam, and I'm curious to get yours. I thought Blaydes looked good. I thought he had a good game plan in the first round. I thought he was doing a good job of, you know, just moving around Derek Lewis, getting the shots in when he needed to. He went for that one takedown. It didn't work out. He got the eye poke. Second round comes up. He did the thing you're not supposed to do, which is try and go for a takedown against Lewis again. Lewis throws that uppercut. It was like a perfect storm. I always look at, you know, there's a couple fights that reminded me of the finish on Saturday. There's the Verdum and JDS first fight that happened. Same sort of thing happened. Verdum had his head down. JDS did an uppercut. Fight's over. And then obviously Masvidal and Askren, where Askren's going for the takedown, Masvidal shooting the knee. It's like the perfect storm of like the thing you're not supposed to do to the thing that you need to do. So Lewis capitalized on that. It was one mistake. Blaydes gets knocked out. Your assessment of the fight, what did you think?
Yeah, Curtis Blaydes had a path to victory with the wrestling. We knew that, James. But I thought he looked really good in the feet in the first round. Like that's what I'm not going to say it surprised me because I thought he did really well against JDS last year on the feet too. So we knew he had some improved striking, but you know, that uppercut from hell, man, just caught him right in the right spot, James. And I think, you know, Blaydes looked okay. He got caught. It happens. That's MMA, especially at heavyweight. I think it says more about Derek Lewis. People really underrate this guy, James. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry. And I know you're a huge Curtis Blaydes fan. I am too. I really like the guy. James, he had no business being a minus 450 favorite. No heavyweight really should be. Derek Lewis, a plus 350. Once again, people just, they just dismiss everything he's done in his career, James. How many times does this guy come back and win fights? Happens all the time. I was like, I'm staying away from this. I don't want to touch this fight. I could definitely see Lewis landing that bomb. Now, having said that, I didn't expect it to happen the way it did. I thought Blaydes would get some takedowns. Yeah. I think Lewis is improving, though. His wrestling defense looked really good in this fight against the fence and an open space where he landed uppercuts. So for me, it was a great performance, great knockout. Glad he got a bonus. I love Derek Lewis. By the way, he's so marketable. He's so funny. Every interview he does is great. I love the guy. I would love to see you get him on your show one day, James. That'd be amazing. Dream guest there.
Yeah, he's tough to get. I've been in touch with his manager, but he just sort of limited with the interviews. He had that great tweet today. I don't know if you saw it, where he's like, Curtis talked all the smack. I'm not going to say anything until Black History Month's over. Like, you know, that's why we like Derek Lewis for this. I don't think it really, you know, to be honest, like kind of looking at the implications of this fight. I mean, I think Lewis fights the winner of Saturday's main event. I don't think they're going to do the Volkov rematch. You could, but, you know, I know it was a couple of years ago, but maybe you go that route. But I think Saturday's main event is more likely. I know he wants to fight Overeem. I mean, I get it, but it's like Overeem's coming off a loss. I guess if Lewis just wants to keep active, that makes sense. But I don't think this is as big of a setback as a lot of people are making up for Blaydes, because even if Blaydes had won this fight, he was still going to have to fight someone else going forward. John Jones is in the heavyweight division now. He's likely fighting the winner of Stipe and Ngannou. So I think Blaydes losing this, yeah, it's a setback, no doubt about it. But I think he can go back in there, win a couple more fights, and then who knows how the division will look like after that. So from that perspective, I don't think it's that bad of a loss for Blaydes. I mean, it's obviously it's not good to lose, but at the same time, I don't think it's as bad. And for Lewis, he's in the same sort of situation where it's like, look, like, yes, he has a win over Francis, but they're still going to give John the title shot next. What do you think?
I agree completely, James. And it was a tough spot for both guys coming in because they knew that John's going to get the title shot. They're probably going to have to fight again. And it's another tough fight because they're most likely, in my opinion, going to fight the winner of Saturday's fight between Gon and Rosenstruck. That's another tough fight, James. So yeah, Lewis, if he beats whoever wins that fight, he deserves another title shot. Here's the thing about Lewis, James. I went through his resume today. I'm looking at it. And, like, the only fight he's truly ever lost on the ground was against DC. The other fights where he was controlled, he eventually got up and knocked the guys over, beat them by decision. So, you know, yeah, he's easy to take down, but you can't hold this guy down, James. He's 265 pounds. He cuts down from 290. He's a massive dude. Huge power. And also, James, how fast is he? Do you see those hammer fists he landed after he knocked Curtis out? And I don't blame him for that, by the way, because the ref was, you know, the ref's got to get in. He's got to knock him out. The speed of those hammer fists. Yeah, I'm with you. I think you're exactly on with the division. John Jones will get that next shot. I have no problem with that, by the way. I think he deserves it after all he's done throughout his career. Give him the immediate shot. Because why would you risk, for instance, if John didn't get the shot, Derek Lewis would be probably the guy he would fight. And that's an extremely tough fight. He might lose. And then you're like, we would never have John with that two belt on his shoulders, which I think quite frankly, maybe the matchups against Stipe or Francis are actually better than Derek Lewis. I look at Derek Lewis as a tough matchup for a lot of people, including John Jones, James. So we'll see what happens in the division. I'm excited, though, man. Heavyweight's got a lot of young guys coming up, and the old guys like Lewis, they're still knocking guys out.
Yeah, Lewis kind of reminds me of, like, and it's a guy he fought, is Mark Hunt to a certain degree, where he's always got that one-punch knockout power. He can end a fight at any time, like we saw against Blades. I mean, it's a weird, he's got kind of a weird style. It's almost tough because you could kind of see on Saturday as well, like Blades was wanting to move around. Lewis was just sort of standing still and sort of waiting for Blades to come to him. So that can be problematic for anyone in the heavyweight division. But like I said, there's a lot of, you know, stuff going on right now in that weight class. So we'll see what happens next for Lewis. But I think likely what's going to happen is he'll fight the winner of Saturday's main event, which we will talk briefly about here on the program. Yeah, so that's the main event. Co-main event. Some people felt it was controversial. I was curious your thoughts. Yana Kunitskaya getting the decision win over Caitlin Vieira, coming through as an underdog. I think the judges, anyways, really counted that third round where Kunitskaya looked great. What was your takeaway from the fight, and how'd you score it? I was curious about that.
Yeah, I was looking at the judges' scorecards, James. Kind of funky scorecards, because one gave Yana the first round, which I thought clearly was Vieira's round, right? Wasn't it? It was the second round Yana won, and the third round was the swing round, quite frankly, James. I got to be honest, I did think Vieira was going to win the fight because she did have top position for most of that round. But that last 10 seconds, the amount of damage that Yana did, and you saw when they were staying there, when the referee's holding their wrist, James, like her face was so bashed up. And Yana looked like she didn't even go into fight. So I picked Vieira. I didn't bet her or anything. I was like, after she missed weight, James, I was like, I'm staying away from this fight. I did think she was going to win, but I actually don't mind the judges giving it to Yana. Like, I think it's a good thing of it. It's showing, hey, you can't just lie on top of someone. You actually have to work. You have to be working. That's what Yana did. That's why she got the decision. I'm not saying I would have scored it that way, but I think it's a good thing from the judges to show that you can't just lay and pray. You actually have to work too.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I initially thought Vieira had won the fight, but I don't have an issue with it in the sense that Yana finished strong. It kind of reminds me a bit of Jones and Reyes, where it was a case where, you know, Reyes didn't really put his foot on the pedal in those last couple of rounds, and Jones ended up sealing the fight. I mean, you know, do I think Dom won that fight? I do, but at the same time, when you're looking at that factor of, hey, how did you finish? I think the judges do look at that a lot. So big win here. I mean, Caitlin Vieira, I just don't think is destined to fight for a UFC title at this point. I mean, this is another setback for her. I think had she won, she might have been able to make a case for a title shot. For Yana, she's kind of in a weird spot because she just lost Aspen Ladd a couple fights ago. I think it certainly helps here. But what do you sort of see for both fighters next with the implications in the bantamweight division?
I was with you in Vegas, James, when she got knocked up by Reyna Aldana in 2019. Right. So that was the fight that if she had won that fight, she probably would have been fighting Amanda because she had fought later that night. They probably would have matched them up. She had a setback there. She bounced back in her last fight. Then she has another setback. Is she a 145er? Because she moved up to 145 where there's a brand new, like an open division. Maybe that's the way to do it. Because I don't see her doing well at 135, James. It seems like she's a very big girl. She's having a hard time cutting all that weight. And we saw in the fight, like she really did get tired as the fight went on. So maybe 145 is a better weight class for her. For Yana, I'm with you, James. Like, if you look at her record in the UFC, it's not that great, really. Like, but you know, she lost to Cyborg, she lost to Aspen. They're two top girls, but her wins are not great except for this one. So, you know, I know Ali Abdelaziz is out there promoting her, saying she's the next champion at 135, James. I don't really see that, but I do think based on her wrestling and her aggressiveness, she can win some fights in the top 10.
Yeah. She's a solid opponent. I don't think there's any denying that. This is a big win for her. We'll see what they decide to do. I mean, everything's kind of in the balance here with Nunes and Anderson, right? Like whoever wins that fight, I'm assuming it'll be Nunes, but what does Amanda Nunes' future look like? Is it going to be back at bantamweight? What are they doing? They just announced Holly Holm and Juliana Pena. So who knows where this sort of fits everyone in the division right now. You've got Jermaine Durandamy out there. So we'll see. I think big win for Yana. Vieira, another setback. We'll see sort of what unfolds from that. I got to give you credit for this next fight. I did see you had Derek Minner as the underdog against Charles Rosa. I said going in, this was a close fight. Derek Minner pulls it out, gets a decision here. Pretty dominant win, though. What did you think of Minner's performance?
Thanks, man. Yeah, I think I was the only one in MMA Oddsbreaker staff picks that had him, which is kind of surprising because you look at Minner's resume, James. He's so deadly in that first round. Really, I'll tell you what swayed me towards him in this fight. It was you, because you had told me he was training James Krause and those guys. I didn't know that. And I was like, that's a great camp. That's great. And you saw the cardio improvement, James. He went 15 strong with an excellent grappler, Rosa, who, by the way, had a couple arm bars that looked really tight there, too. Great fight, man. If you guys like grappling, that's the fight to watch. That was so much fun. I'm a big Derek Minner fan, James. Like, all his fights in the UFC have been really fun to watch, even the ones he's lost to Grant Dawson, for instance. Great fight, though. The scrambles are awesome. So I'm pretty high on Minner. Even the guy has a bad record, 26-11, I think. It's not great. James, if you watch him fight, he's a very, very, very slick grappler. And I love watching this guy work on the ground. Same with Rosa. I like watching him work. But for me, Rosa is a guy that dude, we used to talk about him in the old parting shot, James. Like, we had him on the old parting shot years ago, and he's still around, so good for him. But I've never been sold on Charles as a top contender, and I thought that this was kind of a gatekeeper position for him, and Derek looked really good in this fight.
You certainly did. A couple things. Minner's actually been at Glory even before the TJ Laramie fight as well. So, but this, I think, was like a full camp for him. And you're right. He looked outstanding in this fight. Shouldn't discount him anymore. And he's a guy that had the long road to the UFC. You look at sort of the wins and losses he had this throughout his career. He's fought tough competition. He was ready for a moment like this and absolutely capitalized on it. By the way, the steal in this fight, I'll tell you this, and this is something that Clinton and I talked about on the Die Hard podcast last week, was the over was only 1.5, and it was plus money. Which I was like, I get it, because I know Minner has been finished, but Rosa hasn't really. I mean, Rosa's a tough guy to finish. We saw that in this fight. We saw Bryce Mitchell not being able to finish him. So if anyone cashed in on that, congrats. I thought that was a good value there. But I had a feeling this fight would go the distance. I'm with you. I think Minner, you know, definitely has shown some new life. I'm excited to see where he goes from here under Glory MMA. And for Rosa, I think he's at that gatekeeper point. His problem with him is he's had so many injuries. He's had, you know, layoffs. I just don't know where he fits right now. And this was another loss where he wasn't really in this fight. I thought, I mean, yes, he had some submission attempts, but I thought Minner really dominated. And you can't be getting dominated like that at certain points in the fight. So I don't know where Rosa goes from here, but I would imagine his career is not going to be much longer in the UFC. I love the guy. He's a big hockey fan. You know, even though he's a Bruins fan, I can still talk some hockey with him, but I just don't know what the future looks like for Rosa at this point, because he's not really showing a lot of improvement over the last couple of fights.
So here's the thing. You look at Rosa's UFC run, games, it's win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. Like, he's never put together a streak, literally doesn't have more
than the Randy Marcos at men's featherweight, right?
Yes. That's a great,
So we'll see what happens there. There was a lot of finishes on this card, including this fight, Chris Daukaus, Alexei Oleinik. Chris Daukaus looked outstanding. Both prospects looked amazing on this card. Oleinik, another knockout loss, this time in the first round. Daukaus looked great at him. I mean, this is a guy they got to continue to build in that division. I can't remember the last time we had so many exciting heavyweight prospects, from the main event this Saturday to Cyril Gane to, Tom Aspinall to Daukaus, Tanner Boser. I'd still put him in that category. There's a lot of things to like at heavyweight right now. But what do you think of Daukaus's performance? Because I thought he looked, once he landed that one shot, he just went sort of, you know, Mike Tyson punch out on him, and he looked outstanding.
Looked outstanding. He was one of my big plays. I really liked him in this fight, James. Watching this guy fight, He's so much fun to watch, because his boxing's really good. Great hand speed for a big guy. James, you look at him at the weigh-in, someone was like, dude, how could you bet on this guy? Look at his belly. I'm like, that's how you base a fight off? Really? You watch this guy fight, James, he's a hell of an athlete, dude. Mm-hmm. You know, he got a little belly flap. Doesn't mean anything, dude. He's actually a little bit like the 235 or whatever he weighs. I like that weight for him. He's like a speedy guy, like Tanner Boser, like a little smaller heavyweight, but it works for him. Takes out a veteran or Oleinik with punches against the fence. By the way, it was with people saying that's a bad stoppage. He couldn't even stand up.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad stoppage at all. That was crazy.
I'm very high on Daukaus. 3-0 now in the UFC, James. And I love the guy's story. You know, Philadelphia cop, his brother's in the UFC too. I love that. And, you know, doing research for this card and looking back at his career, this guy's been around for like 10 years, but no one really knew who he was. And I love seeing guys like this emerge out of nowhere. I love this guy, James. He's my new heavyweight favorite, man. I got to be honest. He's like, him and Aspinall, these are my two guys. I just wrote an article today on them, James. The future of the heavyweight division has never been brighter.
I agree. And you know, part of that, you know, his physique is something he's talked about, is that he's never really had the opportunity to do a lot of strength and conditioning, even though he's a cop, like he's working these bad hours. He's not eating great. Like there's a lot of things that went into this. Like he is a full-time police officer. So I think we're just seeing him evolve, especially now being in the UFC, what he's been able to do. Huge win for him. Another, you know, this is the type of win he needed, getting a win over a veteran, keep going forward. I'll talk a little bit later what I think should be next for Daukaus, but for Oleinik, I mean, what do you do now? That's another knockout loss. We're getting to that point now with Alexei Oleinik, unfortunately, Adam, where it's like, I think it's time to cut ties or potentially retire. He's 43. I mean, it's one thing if you're losing fights, but to get finished the way he is, he got finished by Lewis, now he gets finished by Daukaus. What do you do with him?
Yeah, it's always tough to like tell a fighter you have to retire, but 75 fights, I think he's the oldest fighter in the roster right now at 43. He's turning 44. Anderson's gone and Romero's gone. I think he's the oldest guy, James. So that right there is it. I think, you know, if he doesn't retire, they might release him, because James, this is it's getting to the point where it's kind of dangerous watching a fight. Like in the beginning of the fight where he was going for the takedown, missed it, and Daukaus landed on top, I was like, oh no, he's in so much trouble. Because you see Daukaus's fist, he's just going to smash him, dude. So yeah, James, in the last fight against Lewis, he did have some success with the ground game, but then gets KO'd. So, you know, that chin, James, it's always been his problem. Even in Bellator, he was in Bellator like 10 years ago. He got knocked out by Neil Grove.
I did the recap for that.
There you go, for Fight Network. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So always had a problem with the chin. Love the guy, 75 fights, like 50 submissions. Great dude. Retire, become the head grappling coach at American Top Team. That sounds pretty good to me, doesn't it?
There you go. Adam's got the career planned out. I don't disagree with that at all. The other fight on this main card is a big main card. A lot of fights on this card, even though there was some that got pulled. Phil Haas getting a decision over Imadov. I thought this was a good win for Phil Haas because, you know, the big knock on him is, can he go the distance? Can he last three rounds? What did you think of his performance? I thought Imadov kind of threw this away himself. He didn't really fight very well, especially in those later rounds. What did you think?
Yeah, I think so too. I actually scored it for Phil Haas, but a lot of people did have it for Imadov. I even thought I had him, I picked him. So I was hoping he'd win the decision, James. I was like, oh, they're going to give it to us. Let's do it. Right. But, you know, even a plus money, he couldn't come through, James. The third round, some people were saying 10-8 possible because he did put the pressure on Haas. Didn't knock him down, though. So to me, it's like, I don't think that's a 10-8. So I would have given Haas the first two rounds, gave him the win. A quality win. But quite frankly, James, the whole Usman, you know, fence pushing kind of game plan, it wasn't that much fun to watch, you know, from his point of view. But at the same time, this is a guy who's had like three or four shots in UFC Contender Series, tough, always loses. He won his last fight, but he always loses, James. He needed just to get a win. He got it. I think we'll see a better version of him, hopefully, next time out.
And I think Phil Haas looks a lot better at training at Sanford MMA. He seems like a much more confident, much different fighter. I think that's been a good fit for him because you remember in the past, like when he fought Julian Marquez on Contender Series the first time, like he was at Jackson Wink and he was sort of hyped up a bit. And I think now he's found a camp that's really suited his needs, so to speak. And I think we saw that on Saturday. Good win. I think it's good for Phil to get this experience because like Bisping sort of talked about in the broadcast, when you're getting these quick wins, you're not really evolving that much because we don't really know, like you're going to at some point go the distance, right? So it's like good that he got this experience of going a decision and showing that he's got good cardio. That was another thing. People were like, oh, he's going to gas out. Well, I he survived. He ended up getting the decision there. So good win there for Phil Haas. And then the other fight on the main card, we got to talk about Adam's favorite fighter, one of mine as well, Tom Aspinall. Of course, we interviewed him here on Live Movement ahead of the fight, getting the submission win over Andre Arlovsky. You know, come to think of it, this guy has a jiu-jitsu school. Like I don't know why I didn't think, hey, maybe he might submit Arlovsky, but I think the odds on that with the prop was like plus 1200 or plus 1400 or something, but huge win for Aspinall. Again, I think out of the two prospects, I felt less confident in Aspinall pulling off a win over Arlovsky, but he did it. What'd you think of that? This performance? I think he looked outstanding.
The clue's in his Twitter name. It's Aspinall BJJ.
BJJ, I know.
And
I know.
I didn't even realize it until the next day when I was doing the tweets. I was like, Aspinall BJJ wins. I'm like, oh, that's how he won. He had a BJJ black belt. We knew that going in the fight. But in the back of my mind, I'm like, it's not even going to come into play. I thought it would just stay on the feet. And we saw that in the first round. I'll be honest. I did have Aspinall. I had him in Dawkins. And when he didn't knock out Arlovsky, James, when he didn't finish against the fence, I was like, oh, no, he's going to gas and get finished himself now. Because that's exactly what Arlovsky does, right? He covers up, waits till you get tired, then knocks you out or wins the decision. I was worried that was going to happen. But he showed so much to me in that second round. High IQ, very high, James. Went for the takedown, got the fight to the ground, sunk in that choke so quick. I can't wait to watch this guy fight again. Between him and Dawkins, this division, man, holy smokes, these guys are A-plus prospects, in my opinion. Aspinall might be a little bit better because he does have that ground game, but Dawkins has a black belt too.
Exactly, so, yeah. It's tough. That guy's it's tough to see who the better prospect is. I mean, it's and Aspinall wants Dawkins next. I'll talk about the implications of both Dawkins and Aspinall in a little bit and get your thoughts on that. But yeah, huge win for Aspinall, for Arlovsky. You know, who knows? I mean, he's not getting, like, destroyed, but I don't know where he goes from here, right? Like he's just going to continue to get these fights against up and comers, I think, because he's not making a run at the title, right? So
I can't remember the last time I picked him to win a fight. I'll be honest, James. Like I picked against him every fight. It hasn't really worked.
And I thought he lost to Bozer too, by the way.
Yeah,
right?
I did too. That to me was a questionable decision, but the Philly Glenn's fight he did win. He also beat Ben Rothwell 2 years ago, I think. So he can still beat those mid-level guys, but I think like the elite guys like Yarzino and stuff, he'll get knocked out. And guys like Aspinall, they're like legitimate prospects. So here's the difference between Aspinall and Bozer. And I really like Bozer. I don't want to say anything bad about him, but he looked kind of like a scared in that fight, James. Like he had too much respect for Arlovsky. You know, Aspinall was saying the same thing. He's like, the first UFC I ever went to was the card where he fought. I can't remember where he fought, but he said he went to an Arlovsky fight. Was it when he fought for Dew maybe? Was that UFC?
Might have been, yeah. I'm trying to remember.
UFC 70 or something? Aspinall said he was a kid. That was the first fight I ever saw. So that's been his hero his whole life. But he wasn't like in there being like timid or like with those
starstruck. Not like when Pat Barry fought Crow Cop. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he got choked out, right, in that fight, which was in Vancouver too.
That's
so
right. Yeah,
was that I like that Tom's very aggressive, and I like the fact he got the finish, man. I think that shows a lot from this guy, especially on the ground, James, which, again, I should have looked at his Twitter, and I would have put, you know, a few bucks on that plus 1200 prop, man, if I knew the BJJ thing would come and play.
Yeah, no, I agree. Very crazy. Before we talk about the prelims, I got to mention this, Adam. You were suffering, I'm sure, in the same way I was. TSN, man, you guys dropped the ball big time. I'm going, this is my strategy, Adam, I'll tell you, and you'll probably use this being a parent yourself in the future here, but I don't watch the prelims live a lot of times. I'll PVR them, then I'll catch up, and then I'll, like, if there's a break in between fights, and I'll kind of play catch up until the card starts, unless it's like a can't miss thing, because usually I got too much going on. So I tried to do that strategy on Saturday. Didn't work. Why? Because golf's on. Now, come on, TSN, you got five channels and you're telling people to go to tsn.ca to watch the fights. And I also heard, and I don't know if you experienced this as well, that I heard the delay was crazy. It was like 20 seconds back or something. Anyways, they got to fix that, man. Like, you're a partner of the UFC. You're showing this in Canada. It's one of your big properties. Like, I know golf goes on, but can't you flip something around with the channels? That was totally missed the ball on TSN. I was able to watch everything later on Fight Pass. Thank God I have a Fight Pass subscription, but still, that's not a good look, man. When you got a UFC card, you can't watch the fights. Like, you literally on my PVR, it's friggin' whoever, you know, chopping shots. I love golf, I was wanting to watch the fights, so.
No, I'm with you completely. So what I'll say is I saw a lot of people complaining about it, especially Canadian people and people that we know too, which I don't have a problem with. But, you know, I'm very good friends with Aaron, and I've talked to him about this and I've tweeted about it. He doesn't really like when people tweet about this. I'll just say that, because he's like, guys, I don't have anything to do with it. We signed contracts.
No, obviously don't go after Aaron. I mean, he has nothing to do with it. He's
no, I wouldn't say, but some people were. People were, James. They were going after him. You saw it yourself.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, you know, I was disappointed because there's five channels for TSN. Three of them had something called like best dog moments, and it was dogs doing tricks, dude. And there was a UFC that I wanted to watch, and it wasn't available to watch on TV. I was like, I don't want to watch these dogs do jumping. I want to watch UFC. And then the golf was on the UFC channel, and the golf went on really long. And I love golf too. I'm like, you, James, love it, you know, but I'd rather watch UFC. So thankfully I was able to find it through other means, James, but that wasn't the plan, dude. And the other means were not as good as watching on my big screen TV, you know, with my fiance. We're watching on, you know, something else afterwards. So it really was disappointing, but, you know, I'd like for TSN to get their things fixed. But like I said, the last time I said something about it, Aaron kind of had told me, you know, in private, hey, like, this is, you know, this is something that's completely out of our hands and I can't do anything about it. So what's the point of tweeting? But that's basically what was happening.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. Don't tweet Aaron. Aaron's a friend of the show. We like Aaron a lot, but still the higher ups do have to hear about this. It's unacceptable. And like I said, if they knew a golf event was going on, put that on a different, or put the UFC on the dog channel or whatever we're supposed to watch instead. And if you knew there was a potential of the thing going later, right? So that's all I'm saying on that. But anyways, prelims, a lot of great fights here. We're not going to spend too much time on them, but Jared Gordon, how about this? The only unfortunate part was that Jared Gordon missed weight, but I thought he looked good against Danny Chavez. You know, I think in general, Gordon is finding his groove. I've always thought featherweight was the right weight class for him, assuming he can make it. But what did you think of this win? Because I thought it was a pretty solid performance from Jared Gordon.
Yeah, he did what he had to do, get the takedown and rode out the decision, but he missed weight, James. He missed by 4 pounds. That's a pretty big weight miss, you know? So to me, there's, I don't want to say there's an asterisk per se, but to me, it's like not as good of a win as it would have been had he made weight. Like, so, and he lost a lot of his purse too. So was it really worth it? I don't know. But I will say this, like he was the first guy to step on the scale, James. Don't you think he was maybe trying to game it a little bit? He's like, hey, why even bother cutting the other four? I can't make it anyways. Let's just go win healthy. And he told the guy, Chavez, at the weigh-ins, he was like, I'm going to wrestle you. I'm going to hold you to the ground. He did just that to him. So he got the job done, but you know, was it worth it really? Because he coughed up like 30 or 40% of his paycheck.
It was 11 grand, I think he coughed up, was Jesus. What I heard. So that's a lot of money. And here's the thing too. Like, how does he miss weight for this fight when he makes weight in Abu Dhabi when it was short note? Like, he had all these issues. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. He had plenty of notice for this fight. So, because I remember even talking to Chavez. He's like, he knew before the holidays, I think. So no excuse to miss weight. It's unfortunate. I like Jared a lot, though. I mean, obviously, great guy, great story, but you got to make weight, man. That's a big, big asterisk there. How about John Castaneda getting the knockout over Eddie Wineland? You know, this was a pretty, you know, you look at the result on paper and you think, oh, Castaneda knocked him out, but Eddie had some good shots in there as well. It was pretty even, I thought, leading to that finish, but Castaneda getting a full camp, not having to fight Nathaniel Wood on short notice. He gets, you know, a nice win here over a former title challenger, a former WEC champion in Eddie Wineland. I thought Castaneda looked on point. What'd you think?
Yeah, I think Eddie Wineland looked pretty good for 2 minutes, and then it was just, that was it. Once Castaneda started walking forward, Eddie Wineland was done. Because the first 2 minutes, you can even hear the commentary saying, why is Castaneda walking back and just doing that leg kick thing? That's all he was doing, just moving backwards, throwing that low kick while, you know, Wineland was laying some pretty nice straight rights. And I had a bet on Castaneda, so I was like, come on, please don't get knocked out too. Thankfully, James, he turned it around and got the knockout himself. You know, hindsight, James, does it make O'Malley's win over Wineland not as good now? Because this guy did the same thing. Like, and O'Malley, that was his best win, right? So I'm thinking, like, maybe O'Malley's not as good as I thought, because he got finished his last fight. I think he probably beats Almeida, but I mean, it was, I think it was a great performance by John, former Kenbachi America's champion, by the way, who I think is pretty underrated. I mean, he lost to Nathaniel Wood, and people are like, he didn't do anything in that fight. He didn't do enough. I'm like, it's Nathaniel Wood. Nathaniel Wood,
and it was really and good. It was his debut, right?
So on short notice.
Yeah.
So. But here's the question, James, and you talked about it a little bit yourself. Like Wineland, full time firefighter, I believe. Does he do this again? Does he get back in the cage? Why? I don't think he will. I think, you know, the UFC 60 cuts. This is the guy you probably are going to release. 36-year-old guy coming off back-to-back KOs, been with the company a long time, you know, great soldier over the years, James, but I think he might be one of the 60 cuts.
I will talk a little bit more about Wineland later in the program, but for Castaneda, I just say you keep this momentum going. You get a big win here. Let's rebook him right away, assuming he doesn't have any injuries. I'm supposed to be talking to Castaneda this week, so curious to get his thoughts as far as when he wants to get back in there. But hey, good for him. And also one of the few fighters from Minnesota to be in the UFC. You know, we've had Brock Lesnar. We've had a few others, but I saw Greg Nelson in the corner.
Yeah, I know. Nostalgic,
man. It was great to
see. I saw that. I was like, oh, he's training with Greg. I didn't even know he was with Greg Nelson. I was like, happy.
He's from Minnesota. So that's the cool thing. It's like, and Dan Moret was in his corner as well, too. Dan's originally from Minnesota as well. So it's cool to see, you know, Minnesota, because that's not a place that's known for producing a lot of MMA fighters. So I thought that was kind of cool to see him, you know, get the win there for that state. So there you go. Julian Arosa and Nate Landwehr. So I'm curious your thoughts on this. I picked Landwehr, full disclosure. I definitely picked Landwehr in this fight. I thought he was going to knock out Julian Arosa. He had, I mean, it was a firefight. We knew this going out. I thought the stoppage was a little early. I was curious your thoughts, because the angle we saw on TV initially when it happened was you saw Landwehr's back, so you didn't really see him if he went out or not when Arosa hit that one shot, because Nate was against the fence. It certainly wasn't a good situation to be in if you're Nate the Train. But even when they showed the replay, it didn't look like Nate was out. He sort of popped back up. Regardless, another setback here for Nate the Train. He's now 1-2 in the UFC for Arosa. Huge win since coming back. That's back-to-back wins now for him in the UFC. What'd you think of this fight, and what'd you think of the stoppage?
Questionable stoppage, in my opinion, James. I think it was Mark Smith, who is probably one of the best refs right now. Very interesting guy, by the way. He was on Rogan's podcast, talked about his career as a fighter pilot and stuff. Very interesting guy. I think it was a little bit of an early stoppage, though. So even the best refs blow it sometimes, James. It might be a little bit early, but, you know, he was in a bad spot against the fence. And I'm with you. I picked Landwehr as well. So we're probably slightly biased, just being completely honest. You know, that's why we're both saying it. Maybe if we picked Arosa, we've been like, oh, that's a great stoppage. Great. Why do you need that? But I think in this case, James, like, he didn't, like, just because you get knocked down does not mean you're knocked out. To me, he didn't look knocked out, but the angle is really bad, so it's kind of hard to say for sure.
Well, even when they showed the replay, I always look at the face. Does the face go out? Does it change in sort of complexity, or in terms of when you're seeing complexion, sorry, where you're seeing, you know, the fighter's face sort of do that like this, right? I didn't really see that, but again, it was such a weird angle because the ref was there, the camera, it was kind of like a corner shot. It was kind of weird. So I don't know, but either way, hopefully Nate the Train gets another fight, because I like watching this guy fight. He's intense. Hey, for Julian Arosa, great comeback story, man. This guy went through contender series, had to deal with all this stuff, and now he's back and he looked great. So what can you say?
Yeah, he's great. And you know, the fight not going the distance was like even money in this fight. That was, I know you guys were talking about, you're on the podcast with Clint last week. That's easy. That was easy money. Look at their careers. These guys are both bombers, man. They go in there swinging bombs. And Nate Landwehr, I really like watching him, James. He keeps his hands at his waist. That's not a good way to fight in the UFC against a guy like Arosa.
No, who, and he gets taller than you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go next
this fight was. Yeah, of course. Yeah, next fight. Casey O'Neill coming through on her UFC debut, getting the win over Shauna Dobson, the second round TKO ground and pound. I thought O'Neill looked great. I also thought Shauna Dobson looked pretty good early on, too. I mean, they were going toe-to-toe. I don't, you know, oftentimes when we have a newcomer and they're undefeated and, you know, very marketable, if you know what I mean, with Casey O'Neill, I think people romanticize a little bit too much. I thought it was a great win, great performance. But I also thought Shauna Dobson looked pretty good. It was just a case of O'Neill just being a little bit better. I like the win, and I like this, and I think it's someone that they can build on in this division, especially at 125, which needs more up-and-comers. But yeah, again, not taking anything away from Casey O'Neill. I just think that people might be overhyping this a little bit. What do you think? What did you think of her win?
Yeah, no, she looked pretty good. No doubt about it. She got the win in this fight. You know, looking at her coming into this fight, James, like, I wasn't too impressed. I got to be honest. And, you know, a lot of people were, I guess, had a different view of this fight than me, because I was looking at the fight, the opponents she had. They were really like low level opponents, and she did get them down to the ground. That's how she wins her fights. But I thought maybe Dobson training at elevation camp, that would help her with her takedown defense. That, again, was her big problem in this fight. That's her biggest problem, James. If she could stop a takedown, I think she can beat a lot of fighters, because her boxing is very good. She has a lot of power. She's a big girl. But she can't stop a takedown, James. Like, I think she's literally still at 0%. She cannot stop a takedown. you saw what happened once this fight got to the ground, and O'Neil didn't gas out like Agapova did and finished her. So, you know, I think Dobson's got another fight left in her, but I'd really like to see her stop and take down.
Wasn't good in that regard. I think Dobson does get another fight just because it is flyweight, and, you know, like Randa Marcos got another fight too. I could see them giving her one more. With O'Neil, though, I think there's a lot of potential there. By the way, I had some idiot last week tell me that, because I talked about O'Neil having good striking because she comes from Tiger Muay Thai, which is like, you can't train there unless you have like good striking. Like, that's like one of the best striking gyms in the world. And someone's like, dude, you don't know what you're talking about. She's won most of her fights by submission. I was like, I know that, but you still have to hang with those fighters when you're training there. She didn't train at Tiger Muay Thai for this fight, although George Hickman wasn't I think she was in her corner because of the pandemic and stuff.
Let me ask you a question, James.
Yeah, thought O'Neil looked good. Yeah, let's hear it.
What do you think about, I was talking about this with Marcel today. What do you think about, there's a guy in our chat, he was going off on Macy Barber. I don't think he likes her that much, but he's asking us, who does she beat in the division? And I said, Shayna Dobson's a perfect fight for her, like just to get back on track. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that. Macy needs a bounce back fight. Look, the problem that people don't seem to understand is when you build a fighter up, you have to get them back up to that spot again. And, you know, in hindsight, I mean, what was the UFC thinking? If you think about it, co-main event off an ACL injury, fighting Grasso, who might be one of the most underrated flyweights as it is, like, that wasn't a good move on the UFC's part. I think Macy does, you know, she can turn this around, you know? She's 22, and I think Dobson would be a good fight for her, because that's what they're doing. Agapova, O'Neil, there's a theme here. The UFC is giving Shauna Dobson these prospects for her to lose against. I mean, it didn't work against Agapova, but I think with O'Neil, you'll see her get a nice push from the UFC, especially being in Vegas now. She's training at Extreme Couture, so we'll see what happens there. And then this kind of shocked me a bit. Ayman Zahabi, where did this knockout power come from? Getting the first round finish over Draco Rodriguez. I had that long layoff. Of course, this fight was supposed to take place earlier this year. There's some COVID issues with Zahabi. He comes back and gets it done. This was a catch weight of 140. I don't really know why, actually. Who missed weight? Was there a weight miss there? Was it Rodriguez who missed one?
Draco Rodriguez came in at 140.
That's right.
He missed pretty bad in this fight.
Yeah, so Draco, I mean, he lost his fight for himself, but huge win for Zahabi is what he's getting at.
I gotta be honest, James. Going into this fight, I didn't think much of Ayman. And it's nothing against Ayman himself, but he hadn't fought in 2 years. He's getting up there in age. He's in his 30s now. And quite frankly, James, I remember actually we saw that fight together when he fought Ramos on the GSP Bisping card. We were at Dustin's house, and he got brutally knocked down in the prelims. We're all like, whoa. So he had one other fight since then, didn't win that fight. I didn't think much of him. But man, what a punch. 1-2. And it just shows, again, simple combinations like that really do work in MMA. You just throw one strike, it doesn't have to work. You throw two strikes like that, you can knock someone out. You know, Draco must have had a horrible weight cut, James. He's never been finished like this. He has been finished before by Tony Gravely in round 5. Never been stopped in the first round. I got to be honest, James. I thought Draco would win this fight, and this was a big surprise for me. Of all the upsets in the card, I know that the odds don't maybe reflect that. This was one of the bigger surprises for me, I'll be honest. Like, it was nice to see a guy like this, a Montreal Canadian native guy, the fellow Canadian, getting a win here, James. Like, we don't have any Canadians to look forward to in the UFC these days. It was nice to actually have a big win from Canada.
Zahabi with the big win. I say you get him back in there as soon as you can. You build off this, you get the momentum going. I mean, he's not getting any younger, like you mentioned, Adam. I would get him in there right away and get him back on, because it didn't look like he had any injuries or anything, right? And I think, like you said, not a lot of Canadians have been winning lately, so you need to push something in Canada. And if that's Ayman Zahabi, so be it. I thought he put on a very good performance there. And then opening up the card, kind of predicted this. Sergey Spivak, way too much for Jared Vandera, I should say, getting the second round TKO victory. I think it was just too much of a step up for competition, and I don't know what you do with Vandera in this situation, because he's going to fight nothing but killers going forward. Spivak is a very good fighter, but I don't think it's going to get any easier from here on out. What was your assessment of the opening fight of the card?
Yeah, I mean, he's the one who called him out. Vandera is the one, after his fight in Contender Series, like, I want to fight Sergey Spivak. The UFC booked it a few months ago. Someone got COVID, I can't remember who it was, and then they rebooked it. Spivak looked great. I thought he'd win this fight too, James, just with the grappling. That's exactly what he did. I think getting the finish was really nice, though. You know, this is a guy that, quite frankly, James, when he came in the UFC, a lot of people wrote him off after he got knocked out by Walt Harris in Ottawa. I think you were at that card, if I'm not mistaken.
I quit the
Cowboy. He got knocked out on that card. And people kind of wrote him off after that. Since then, he's won 3 of 4. He beat Ty Duvasa, Vandera, Felipe, lost to Tabur, who's a top 15 guy. To me, he's a borderline top 15 guy. He's like right on the edge of the top 15. So he beats a lot of guys in the UFC. And quite frankly, 26 years old, James, he's got a long career for ahead of himself. He might last 10 years in the UFC.
I agree. Now, we talked about some of the fights on there. Let's start with the Eddie Wineland and John Castaneda fight. I'm with you, Adam. I think it is time for Eddie Wineland to hang him up here. 36 years old. I mean, that's not that old. I can tell you that because I'm also 36. But in general, you know, just you look at where he's at in his career. This guy does not fight that often. He's fighting basically once a year, basically since 2017 onwards. He's only fought one time. That's because he's a firefighter. And I get it. You got to pay those bills. Fighting is not, you know, your main source of income right now. But he's starting to get into that territory where he's getting finished. That's back-to-back stoppage losses right now. You know, Castaneda does have knockout power, but he's not exactly known for that as being like a power puncher. And I think we're starting to see the decline of Eddie Wineland at this point. So I always say it on here. I think it's better to get out earlier than too late. I would be fine if that was Eddie Wineland's last fight. Maybe do one more against a guy that's not really going to take his head off type thing. But I think this is the end of the road for Eddie Wineland, because what does he really have to offer? That's another loss to a prospect. Obviously, they put him against O'Malley to build him up. But I think for Castaneda, this was an opportunity for both fighters to kind of show what they're made of, especially with Castaneda. Was the short notice an issue against Nathaniel Wood, or is it the fact maybe you're not up to snuff? Well, he certainly is, because he knocked him out. So I think I'd like to see Eddie Wineland walk away at this point. What do you think?
Yeah, me too. I'm just looking at his record right now on Wikipedia, and it's like, this guy, he's been fighting for 18 years professionally. That's a long time, man. That's a long career. James, you know, he's been in the UFC for 10 years. That's a long time in the UFC. Fighting the best guys in the world for 10 years. Are you kidding me, James? It's amazing what he's been doing for so long. I'm a big fan of this guy, man. I've always been a fan of him. He had that knock over Ken Stone back in WC where he slammed him. It was like one of the most brutal knockouts you ever see. He had some great fights in the UFC. Fought for the belt. We were at that card, James. It's Gustafson and Jones. We were at that card, and he got knocked out and, you know, lost 4 or 5 now, age 36, doesn't fight full time. I think that's it. I think that's it for Mr. Wineland. So great career though, man. Probably one of the, like, arguably, like, maybe like a top 10 career bantamweight, James. It's possible. If I had to,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened on this card, a fight that didn't take place. We talked about how many fights were on here. There's a couple that didn't end up happening. One of them was the Rafael Alves and the Pat Sabatini fight, because Rafael Alves came in at 157. That wouldn't be a big deal if this is a lightweight fight, is a featherweight fight. How on earth you come in this late? And then here's the kicker, Adam. He says, and I'm not a health expert, but I do know a thing or two about nutrition, but he says it was because he ate too much salmon. Well, guess what? Salmon's anti-inflammatory. So if anything, that should help him lose weight, not gain weight. This guy, I don't know. I mean, you cannot have much of a worse debut in the UFC outside of not fighting than what happened with Rafael Alves on the weekend. 157. If the UFC cut him, I wouldn't be upset by this, because how can you come in that heavy? It just doesn't make any sense. Salmon or not, that's just a bad showing. And, you know, guys have been cut for a lot less, whether it's health issues, whether it's, you know, weight cut stuff. We've seen fighters get released before. If they wanted to release him, this is one where I wouldn't have an issue, because it's just totally disrespectful coming in this heavy. At least give the UFC a heads up. At least try and do a catch weight or something. We've seen that happen before, where guys like, look, I'm too heavy. Remember that happened with Manny Bermudez and Casey Kenney, where Bermudez is like, I'm too heavy, let's try and do a catch weight here. They didn't even do that. They did something where he just went on and I guess thought he was going to make it. So this might be the worst excuse I've ever seen for a weight cut miss. Two weight classes up. I don't remember the last time this has happened outside of maybe, did Rumble come in that heavy one time? I can't remember. But either way, totally bad look by here for Rafael Alves. What was your thoughts on this debacle, which canceled this fight?
Tiny correction, 157.5. So it was actually 0.5 more. Yeah. And that's actually what set the record.
Exactly.
Rumble had the previous record. He was 11 pounds over, but it was middleweight. So he came in at, supposed to be 185. He came in at 197. So it was bad. But this, to me, is arguably worse, coming in, James, from 145 to 157.5, because as a percentage of body weight, that's even worse, right? So, you know, this guy, he said he's going to get another fight. He said Sean Shelby told him he's getting another fight at lightweight. I would just release him. Why would you want this guy on your roster? You can't even make Actually, James, he didn't even make lightweight. He missed two weight classes. I don't remember when that's ever happened in the UFC. I know this girl, Josette Cotton, had missed it against Kayla Harrison a few months ago now, but I can't remember something like this in the UFC except for Rumble. It's very rare for professional fighters at this level to miss weight this badly, James. So this is his first fight in the UFC, James. I wouldn't bring him back.
I wouldn't either, and I'm not one to get rid of fighters. You know, if anything, I'm pro fighters when it comes to stuff like this, but there's just no excuse. They had plenty of notice by the sounds of it. I mean, you're supposed to fight Trezano anyways on this card, so it's like you can't even use the excuse of like, oh, well, you came off the couch type thing. And two, if you knew that you were this heavy, give the UFC the heads up. We've seen catchweight fights. We saw that happen. And, you know, we've seen this happen many times for the UFC. So I just think a bad look all around by Rafael Alves. If he gets another fight, I guess good for him. But I think it sets a bad precedence, because there's been fighters, like I said, been cut for less. You know what I mean? Whether it's a weight cut miss or a health issue or something, and they've just been released. This sets a bad precedence here if you're letting a guy like Alves basically get away from doing this. Thank God they didn't let him fight at him. You imagine if they said, hey, we'll do it, but the commission has rules there in place for you can't be a certain amount of weight, right? So good to see he didn't actually get the fight there. And speaking of setting a bad precedent, here's another thing I had an issue with. Ottoman Azeitar back in the UFC after that whole debacle in Fight Island. I mean, again, this is setting a bad precedence here. I don't care what his record is. I don't care that he's, you know, managed by, you know, dominance. It's the fact that this guy put people in danger by going out of the bubble, by doing, you know, something stupid here. And I want to know what's in that bag, Adam. Let's be honest here. But honestly, like, all joking aside, this guy should not be given another shot, because it's just, you're basically just telling the fighters, if you have good management or whatever, you can do whatever you want. You can get back in the UFC. I think it's such a bad idea, because we're in the middle of a pandemic right now. I think it's, you know, some people might be saying I'm being a bit overdramatic here, but I think you got to look at the health concerns here and the payday. I mean, how do you think his opponent felt losing out on that fight because his opponent was an idiot? So I don't know. What are your thoughts on this? Am I being too harsh? You got to tone me down a little bit. What do you think?
Oh man, you're good. Like, think about it. Dana cut him. Dana was like, we're getting rid of you. He told the media, he was like, this guy, you know, cut his wristband off, gave it to his friends. They snuck in, some dude shimmied down some bill. Like, the way Dana was describing it, it's like Mission Impossible, James. I'm thinking it's like Mission Impossible Abu Dhabi is going on here at UFC Fight Island. What's in the bag? That's the big guess, right? That's the big question. You know, it's like Pulp Fiction, you know, Pulp Fiction, the movie, when they open that briefcase, you just see the shine from it. That's what I'm thinking. Maybe something like that. But what's in there? I thought it was diuretics to help him cut weight. That was my guess. I thought it was a weight cutting thing, but I really have no idea. That's a complete guess. I wouldn't have brought him back either. Here's my question. Why did he change his mind about him? What about Paul Daly? What about Jason High? They never changed their mind about those guys, James. Paul Daly made a mistake in that fight. He never fought again in the UFC. You know, this guy did something arguably worse. Like, he put people's lives at risk with COVID potentially. That's arguably worse than like punching a guy after the dog. This was bad. Don't get me wrong. Just, you know, Dane is very, like, he doesn't usually change his mind. So I'm surprised he changed his mind. But knowing Ali, there's probably some deal going on, James. Like, you do this, you know, reinstate this guy, and I'll do this for you, kind of thing. I'm sure that's what's going on, James.
So as we were doing the show, we had a bit of breaking news. We might as well talk about it a little bit here. We've got Gavin Tucker now fighting Dan Ige. Dan Ige was supposed to fight Ryan Hall. He's out of the fight. Now he gets his fight. But I'm looking on Tapology here. May 1st is when Gavin Tucker was supposed to fight Cub Swanson. So what happened here? I'm very curious. I mean, I like the fight. I think it's a good step up for Gavin Tucker. I like the matchup. I don't know why they're not booking Shane Burgos and Dan Ige. That seems like an obvious fight for me, with Burgos losing out on his fight against Hakeem Dawodu. Dawodu's injured. Just your reaction to this as we're getting this in with the new fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's an okay fight, but I'm with you, James. I think that would have probably been a better fight. Man, Burgos, he needs a fight, right? The Dawodu fight fell apart. That would have been probably a better fight. So
it did. It was an injury to Dawodu that took it out. So
yeah, I'm just confused what happened to the Swanson fight. Like, was that one of those fights that Brian Okamoto tweeted about because the UFC matchmakers wanted it, James, and it didn't actually get signed to paper? You know, because that happens quite often. Actually, Marcel was telling us today about I can't remember what fight. Oh, Herbert Burns, he's supposed to fight this guy, Alex Munoz. And AG Fight broke the story, a Brazilian outlet. So Alex Munoz tweeted Marcel and sent him a DM, and he said, "Yo, Marcel," he's like, I never signed this fight. Who broke this news?" Then you found out that AG Fight had broken his last three fights. So you know there's some strong arming going on behind the scenes. There's always that stuff going on behind the scenes, James.
No, we've seen that happen. Early pick for that fight. I think I would give a slight edge. I feel like I always pick Gavin Tucker's fights wrong for whatever reason, but I think he takes this one. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever caught a fight right with Gavin Tucker.
Me neither.
After the fight with Rick Glenn, I've left him.
Same here. Ever since then, it's like, I don't know where this guy is. Yeah, I know. That was the fight for me too, because he got beat down so badly in that fight with Rick Glenn. And granted, that was back in 2017, but still, I don't know. I still feel like Ige might win this one. We'll see.
Yeah, I think my slight lean would be towards Ige, and he has got a full camp too, so he should be ready to go.
So that fight would take place on March 13th. That is the Bilal Muhammad and Leon Edwards card. I think that's what they're saying. I don't see it updated here, but that's the fight they're proposing, because the Tucker fight against Swanson was in May, so maybe they're just like, hey, maybe you could do both. Maybe you could fight Ige and then fight Swanson.
Oh, yeah, true.
We'll see, do a whole Chimaev thing. We'll see what happens there. We'll do a couple quick picks as well before we wrap up here with Saturday's card. I'll just pick a couple fights here. I'm curious your thoughts on this one. Alexis Davis and Sabina Mazo, which is actually at 135. Tapology has it listed at flyweight, but both are moving up. So Mazo's first fight at 135. What do you think of this one? Because Davis is the underdog, has way more experience, has fought in that weight class before. I'm picking Mazo, but I think there could be some value in Davis. Am I out of line here?
I think the odds are really high. Like, I was looking at them, it was minus 250 maybe for Mazo, maybe higher now, and Davis is plus 200 at least. So I don't know if there's value though, James, because she's way older. Like, I was looking at it last night. Mazo's 22 or 23 years old. She's very young. Also, you look at her, the statistics, she, like, the strikes, the amount of strikes she's landing in her fights, she's breaking records. So to me, like, she's a very good prospect. I actually didn't know this was at 135, so thank you for telling me that. I'm curious to see how the move up in weight goes. But she's actually a very big flyweight. She was very tall and very long, very young. James probably just grew out of the weight class, you know. So could be a bet. Like, she might actually even look even better. It's possible. I think the odds are probably a little bit high, but my lean right now is towards Mazel, although I will be looking into this fight more towards the week.
And yeah, I'm picking Mazel as well, because I think the upsides, I mean, usually when you have a younger fighter who's going up, and I can confirm that Mazel is very big for the weight class. She's 5'7". I did an interview with her last year before the Shauna Dobson fight in person, and I can tell you how big she is. But here's the thing. I feel like this is a spot where we might be overlooking Davis, because you look at her last three losses, Chookagian, Maya, and Arujo. I mean, those are top fighters in that division, right? And I don't think Mazel's fought anyone close to that. You look at her wins, conversely, Dobson, Aldrich, and Justine Kitch, not exactly top flight opponents. Again, I'm picking Mazel to win. I just think there could be some value there on Davis as the underdog, because it is a kind of a discrepancy there. So I wanted to talk about that one. And then, you know, just the main card here, we'll quickly go through the picks here. I like Caceres over Kroom, but Kroom's another Glory MMA guy where it's like, could he pull off the upset like Derek Minner did last week? Is that how you're feeling, or do you think Caceres takes it out?
I gotta be honest, man. I am looking at Kroom here as an underdog. He's plus 185. He opened to plus 250. I know there's some guys like Clint I saw nailed him too. So some people got him early. I think the line's gonna drop. That line was way too high. Caceres has looked good lately, three straight wins, James. But I actually, my lean right now is towards Kroom as a dog. He looked amazing against Roosevelt. And I'm not convinced because he smoked a joint that he's not gonna be the same fighter in this fight, you know?
No, I agree with that. Some other quick picks we'll go through. Hill and Yoder. Hill's like a 3-1 favorite. I think she wins, Adam. I like her better by decision. I like that prop if you have an eye on that one, because I just don't see Hill. Yoder's never been finished. Yoder's probably going to lose. Yoder might win, but I didn't think she looked very good in the last fight against Miranda Granger. So I like Hill here, even though she's on the 2-fight losing streak. Where are you leaning on this one?
So my lean is towards Hill. I mean, that's where the line is. But, you know, I was looking at this fight last night, and Yoder's like taller. She's longer. She's a southpaw. She has some advantages, James. So I'm actually going to take a closer look at Yoder here. Like, I think she's a little bit underrated. People kind of just look at her record and the UFC's not that great, but her fights are very generally competitive. Maybe she's going to make it a closer fight. Angela Hill's, I'm sorry, but Angela Hill's really not as good as a lot of people are saying. Like, she's a good fighter.
I agree.
She's top 15, but she is not a minus 300 favorite, I don't think, against anyone.
No, shouldn't be. I think 2-1, you can even go minus
open 150. Open at minus 175, James. Open at minus 175. The public.
I would agree with that one a little bit better there. Just a couple other quick ones we'll go through here. Munoz and Rivera. I like Munoz for the upset here. I do. I've been high on him for a while. I think he gets the win this time. Of course, they lost, or they fought back in 2017. I thought Munoz beat Edgar. I think he's still a top bantamweight. I don't know if Rivera's there yet. Where are you leaning on this one? I know Dan Levy, by the way, likes Jimmy Rivera as well.
Nice. This is a tough one to call, I think. Also, what's really screwing up for me is Rivera had COVID. That was the second time getting COVID. That is really weird. Like, who gets COVID twice? He's had COVID twice in the last year. Yeah. He had it like last May or something. You know, Munoz is, I thought he'd beat Frankie Edgar James. I was one of the people who thought he beat him. So to me, you know, he's a guy with really improved striking. He is a little bit up there in age, though. He's like 35 now. He's getting up there. So close fight. My lean right now is towards Rivera. I just think he's a little bit better at striking, but it's a close fight and go either way.
Okay, there you go. So we disagree on that one. And then just looking on blitzbet.eu, we've got the co-main event. We're going to skip all the way there. We've got Ankalaev taking on Nikita Krylov right now on blitzbet.eu. Ankalaev about almost a minus 4-1 favorite. I think that line's a little steep. I like Ankalaev. I see him as a potential, you know, contender in the future, but I don't like him at that price. I would look at the inside the distance prop, which is closer to, I think it's like minus 130 or something. But who do you like in this fight?
That's a great point. Yeah, I don't think this fight's going the distance. I was looking at this fight a little bit last night. Like, I think it's probably a little closer than people are thinking. Like, Krylov, his two losses since he came back to the UFC are to Glover Teixeira by split decision and to Jan Blachowicz. Those are not bad losses, James. And he's coming off a win over Johnny Walker. He's a little bit underrated. More experienced in the UFC, too. So my lean right now is towards Ankalaev, like the line suggests, because of the striking. But I think Krylov's going to make this a tougher fight than some people realize.
Totally with you there. In the main event, curious to get your thoughts on this. This kind of feels like last week's main event in the sense that we've got a heavy underdog in Yarzino Rosenstrike, who, looking on blitzbet.eu, plus 220, Cyril Gane, minus 278. Like, I get it, and I'm going to pick Gane here. I have to. He's got better upside. I mean, this guy just does things you don't expect from a heavyweight. He's very, like, a lot of, there's a million reasons to pick against Gane here in the sense that he doesn't have a lot of experience. He hasn't fought as good a competition as Rosenstrike, but he does things in fights that just you don't see from other heavyweights. And we talked to Fernand Lopez here on the channel. I mean, he even didn't believe in Gane early on in his career, and he's been proving everyone wrong since his days in TKO. So I'm going to take Gane just because I don't think Rosenstrike's going to put him out early. But this line's way off. I think it should be much closer. And I think Rosenstrike can finish a Cyril Gane in this fight. How are you looking at this fight?
Heavyweight fight, man. So definitely, you know, the dog could win this fight just by pure knockout power alone. I wouldn't be surprised if Rosenstrike won, but everything's pointing to Gon winning this fight, man. Everything. Yeah. Like, he is the more well, he's the better MMA fighter. He really is. He's the more complete fighter. His, I think he's going to be smart in this fight, James. I actually wouldn't be surprised, James, if he actually just grinded Rosa Strikeout and won a decision. Just kind of wrestled him like Overeem was doing. Overeem was about to win a decision, got KO'd with 4 seconds left. It's possible that could even happen here, but my lean towards Gon, but I actually think it's going to be like more of a strategic-based fight than just him going in there and knocking Rosa Strikeout. I think he'll be very smart in this fight. He's a very smart fighter.
I agree. Great main event. Looking forward to this card. Can't wait for Saturday. Adam, thanks so much for doing this. Before we get out of here, we got an announcement. We kind of teased it off there. The Parting Shot Podcast with Adam and I will be back. We're going to be doing it once a month on my Patreon channel. So hope you guys tune in. We'll have details on when the first show will be. But if you like today, this is just a sample of what you'll get here. We'll be a lot. We got a lot to talk about, you know, especially doing this once a month. There'll be a lot to get into. A lot of stuff you won't hear on our regular podcast that Adam and I both do. So really excited about that, Adam, us joining forces again. And for people who don't know, Adam and I, the first MMA podcast I ever did with a co-host with Adam. We have a lot of history. It's cool. We talk all the time. A lot of people don't know that. It's going to be fun to join forces with you, man. So maybe just, I don't know. Anything else you can talk about with the podcast? We're really stoked to be back in business next month.
Yeah, for sure. And there's so many new fans in the sport, which I love, man, because I love interacting with the fans. So they might not know that me and you have such a like strong, long friendship together, because I remember it was like 2013. Yeah. I think we had our first podcast. It's been almost 10 years now, and it's crazy, right? But I'm excited to start doing it again, James. We've obviously been doing the line moving here. Maybe like once every couple months, I've joined you, and I love it. And I'm excited to do it on your Patreon. Sign up for James' Patreon, guys. You know, James does so much work for his community. He does so much work for free for people, and it's time, you know, just to help him out a little bit. He deserves this. I hope he does really well with his Patreon. In fact, there's a few other people in the business, James. Like Kaposa, who also started one. And I'm trying to get Marcel to start one too. I think there's a lot of people that are really doing a lot of work that aren't getting you know, thanked enough. And I think these patrons are great ideas for that. And you're going to have so much content. I'm like, so excited for it, man.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to it. What do you got coming up this week, Adam? Where can people get a hold of you on all your platforms and all that?
Dude, I'm so busy these days. It's great, man. I love it. So you guys can follow me on Twitter at @MMAdamMartin. I'm available there anytime you guys want to talk. I want to talk about one quick thing here. I'm with this new website called Elite, and we're with Elite DFS, Elite Betting. So, you know, it's something I wasn't sure I was ever going to really get into. James actually gave me my bets out and stuff. But I got to be honest, man, you know, with the kid coming, they made me a great offer to join their website as a consultant. I love it, James. It's not like I have to just sell my picks like some people do, which, you know, that's their job, to be fair. I'm just a consultant. I'm giving my best advice. We're doing a podcast there. I love it. It's called Elite. It is great. I'm so excited to be there. I was so excited to be here with you. And Jordan, thanks again, Jordan. And James, man, it was awesome to do this. Yep.
Yeah, so we'll be back here a week today. Line Movement, Octagon Outlook. We do the show every Monday, recapping the card from the weekend before. Really excited to do that. Follow me on Twitter and on Instagram at Lynch on Sports. If you want to sign up for the Patreon, it's patreon.com/LynchOnSports. But all that information's on my Twitter at Lynch on Sports. I post everything there 24/7. Shout out to Adam for doing this. This is just a taste of what you guys are going to see every month. And shout out to Jordan for doing an amazing job behind the scenes here. Thanks so much for watching, guys. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much for watching, and have a great rest of your week.